do with co-education. And I wasn't able to prepare, since all the source material was here and I was there and I didn't come back in time, so I was able to prepare and do the research that I wanted to do on it. So we'll have to get to that some other time. The fact of the matter is that it's, that with a little stretch of imagination, the discussion of where you need a pizza, where you don't need a pizza, where you need a pizza, little shear, you can extend the things to some extent to the whole question of co-education, but, and the question becomes of what age to separate, if to separate. It's not a simple issue who you represent. Model figures is Rabbi Soloveitchik's permission for education. Brookline represent the precedent that he passed in faith that is for the co-education permissible or not permissible. There are all sorts of questions on this issue. Since I didn't do the proper research on the subject, I decided that I wouldn't discuss it. We'll get around to it eventually. What I would like to do is start a topic which is a very pivotal topic, not in its halakhic application, but in the Jewish community's perception of women. And I say Jewish community, I don't mean men. I mean women themselves. And as we're going to go through this particular, the topic has to deal with, essentially, women, starts off, the topic will start off with women as menstruants. What is the fact that a woman have a period? How does that affect their functioning as halachic personalities? How does it affect their davening, going to shul, things like holding the Sefer Torah, holding holy books? Is that a problem? Okay, that's one topic. And then we're going to talk about, once we've pretty much digested that topic, we're going to be talking about women and tefillin. And then we'll talk about women and tzitzis. That's a woman putting on tefillin, woman putting on tzitzis. And is there a difference between a talit katan and a talit gadol, a full corner garment that one would wear under this clothing, or a full corner garment that one would wear above the clothing, sure. What are the problems? What about women writing tefillin, making tzitzis, all right? Writing megillas, okay? Those are essentially the topics that we want to deal with. And you will see that the right place, I think, although you don't have to, but the right place, I think, to start is with, like, the topic, as you can see on the top, is Nidah Tefillah U'Divrei Torah. This is a collection of sources. Now, some of you may find it's a little excessive, but there's a reason that I wanted that we're going to go through many, many sources, because anybody who's written some of the stuff that I've written, realize very quickly that my policy is if you can't convince people with logic, mull them over with sources. Right? That is not only what I say, but that's an absurd position to hold, but I would say, but 10,000 folks can say the opposite anyway. I mean, I don't have to convince you logic, everybody says it. But that is going to be, and since the question of if I ask you why a woman can't hold a Sefer Torah, the first thing somebody's going to say, well, she'll be a Nida. She may be a Nida. I mean, that's the first answer that you get at sort of the thing, whether you ask men or you ask women, I mean, that's the first answer. Okay? I hope I will convince you that while that's not completely off the wall, it's not really, as they say, it's not what the halacha holds. I don't say there's nobody who says it. I don't want you to think, and we're going to start off right from the very beginning with somebody who says a very, very extreme position. But I want to show you that as you go through the halacha, you will see that the halacha doesn't move that way. And certainly as we move in the 20th century, you'll see that things are changing. And we'll have to begin to understand a variety of concepts of what it means to be clean, and what's dirty, and what's... I mean, these concepts we'll have to sort of deal with. Okay, so let's start right off the bat, okay? We're dealing with women who are menstruants, davening, and saying the great Torah, and the like. Okay, now the first point is, first of all, I apologize. This was written by me many, many years ago. It was written originally on a, they, when Xeroxing was very expensive. This is a photocopy of a sheet that looks something like this. You know, the blue, you remember the blue
photostats?
Anyway, it was many, many years ago. I also, at that point, did not know how to use my fingers on the computer. And so everything is handwritten, but I think we'll read it together. After a while, they get used to my handwriting. Because we're going to be studying from my handwriting for the next 3, 4, 5 weeks. Okay. So the whole question is the fact that a woman is a menstruator. Let me just go very briefly. I'm sure you're all aware, but I just want to briefly mention some very important distinctions. Okay? I just want to go through a couple of halachot in regard to women and tumah. The Torah indicates that a woman, when she begins to menstruate, okay, is tmei'ah leba'ala utmei'ah lemikdash. She is forbidden to have sexual relations with her husband. From the Torah rules, it's 7 days. According to later rabbinic and custom, it became you needed the minimum of 5 days of menstruation proper plus 7 clean days. Until you went to the mikvah, and that is the period that a woman is a nidah, and until she goes to the mikvah, she cannot sleep with her husband, nor can she enter the Beit HaMikdash. Another woman who has a status of a nidah, and this is also relevant to the discussion, is a yoledet. A yoledet is a woman who gives birth, and she gives birth to a male child, she is tamei 7 days, okay? And if she gives birth to a daughter, she is tamei 14 days. Part of the stuff that they don't tell you is, that's 7 days now, okay? And then with the rabbinic addition, it becomes a little more complicated. The part of what they don't tell you is that it's true that with a male child she is tamei'ah less and twice as much as a female. However, the Torah had a concept of what's called dam toha. But if the woman leaves after 7 days for a male, she then has a total of another 33 days in which all blood that she sees is the dam toha. She can bleed after the 7 days. If she bleeds during the 33 days, doesn't make a difference. 7 days she bleeds, she's tamei'ah. Then another 33 days, it's dam toha. She's double bad. With a female child, there's 14 days, okay, of tum'ah, 66 days of dam toha. Now, anybody who's been through childbirth can tell you that the first 14 days is a problem no matter what. So I'd rather cash in and have the 66 days than the 33 days. Okay? So, I mean, while everybody, women's livers wave the flag of the, what's this 14 versus 7 today, but they don't even mention the 66 versus the 33, which is a very, that's rabbinically, but not Israel. Change things, and as soon as you see the one here today, I don't know what, so it's... Okay, so a yoledet also has a deal with the nidah. Okay. Now, notice there, as far as the laws of nidah, you have the five days woman's menstruating, and the 7 days afterwards, 7 clean days, there's no halachic difference as far as the mikdash or her husband in the 5 days and 7 days. But she's a nidah. She has the status of Midah, both for her husband and for the Midash. It makes no difference. Keep that point in mind, because if you're going to see right off the bat, it's going to start jumping out at you, some of the distinctions that occur with this custom. There was a prohibition for women to enter the Midash when they were Nidot. That's true. The question is, does this extend to a Beit HaMikdash as well? Now, it's not off the wall to say that it maybe it does, because we saw that a Beit Knesset is what? A Mikdash Ma'at. It's considered a temple in miniature. But if you think about it for one more millisecond, you will say to yourself, wait a second, but a Tamei Met can't go. Anybody who's been in contact with a dead body until he gets sprinkled upon him, the water of the Parah Aduma can't enter the Beit HaMikdash either. And yet we are all Tamei Met, which is the worst form of Tuma, and that doesn't prevent men or anybody from entering the Beit HaMikdash. So if you think about it, excuse me, Beit HaKnesset. So you can see, I mean, there has to be some sort of internal consistency, right? So Tuma clearly is not an issue. It may have been that at one time people were indeed careful about, I don't know any record in the Kaposkin. There may have been a custom at one time that a person who was a Tamei Met didn't enter the Beit HaKnesset at the time of Bayit Sheni, where maybe there was such a custom. I don't know of any sorts. But if there was, you know, it has to be across the board. If you can apply it to women, if you're going to logically want to say, well, maybe women shouldn't enter a Beit HaKnesset just like they don't enter the Beit HaMikdash. But that Tumat Nida is certainly not as serious as Tamei Met, which everybody is a Tamei Met, and then everybody enters the Beit HaKnesset.
I understand, and I have heard from some different sources that it is a tendency. There were times that the main met was very, very important. What I Shrishi Levi, Shrishi Levi in Hamishi, today nobody's asking.
Nobody.
You have been to a funeral, Lo Aleinu. Shaloneda, you go for your water over your
head. Yeah, but on your hands.
Yes, wait a minute. In those days, the kippah wasn't at all mentioned.
No.
And nobody these things do change.
Oh, no question that you can. I'm just trying to say, we have to think about the halakhic consistency of certain logic. And we have to keep that in mind. Okay, let's now begin with an Agur. The Agur lived in the 1500s, okay? Excuse me, the 1400s, I apologize. The Agur lived, he was the very end of the Rishonim period, the 15th century. And the Agur quotes the Sefer HaMitzvot. Sefer HaMitzvot is a very early Rishonim, if I'm not mistaken, I'm not positive. I think he lived either in the 900s or the 1000s. It's, to put it, let me explain, I'm being credit. Let's read it. Let me just see what he says. And then I'll tell you what the post was saying. The Sefer HaMitzvot, the Agur quotes the Sefer HaMitzvot, and I have a copy of the book in my hand. Katav Shishalo Tikanes Bevet HaKnesset, a woman should not enter a shul, Kol Yemei Ri'iyata Ad Shetitbaben, all the days of her seeing, Ad Shetitbaben, until she becomes clean. Because for the five or whatever days it is that she is actually bleeding or staining, she can't enter the shul. Actually, to the pain until she becomes clean. Okay, until the beginning of the, until she does a hefsek tara, beginning of the 7 days. Shinema, what's the source? The whole kodesh lotika. Talks about a nidah. The nidah cannot enter the Beit HaMikdash nor touch things that are sanctified. Ubisharim midua. The Agur now quotes another book, which is in the early Rishonim, very called the Sharim Yidua. Katuv ki b'yemei nidata asura lazkir et Hashem. She can't even mention God's name. V'chein b'yemei nidunah. The same thing is true of the Nevi Tuna, she can't mention God's name. Now let me just mention, this represents one extreme position, quoted in the Poskim, okay? That a woman should not, the Sefer HaMitzvot said a woman should enter shul while she still has a flood. Now, the Sefer HaMitzvot says a variety of very strange things. And several of the poskim, for example, the Tzitzel Yezer, the Balmer, the Shlita, who was the head dying, the head of Shalayim. He says a variety of strange things. He feels that the book is a strange book. But it's quoted. I can't deny that it's quoted. The source seems to be mystical, because as we go through, we'll continue reading. But right off the bat, you see that the Sefer HaMitzvot is problematic. Why? Because he says it applies only to when she has a flow. But during her clean days, it's all right. Now that doesn't make a lot of sense, as we're going to see. Rashi already attacks it, such a position. Rashi already attacks such a position. He said she shouldn't enter shul. He quotes now the Ogur, then quotes somebody else. The Shari Nidura. That's Shari Nidura. It's a later verse, a different one. Who says, no, that she not only she can't mention God's name, even during her cleanness. Okay? So he's even more extreme. She not only can't she enter shul, she can't even daven. She mentioned can't bear God's name. Now what would be the logic there? The logic there is sort of when you daven, you set up a sort of a bacon with a shim yourself. We saw a similar concept, Aloya Bachael Davao, and the Gemara says that he was referring to the camp is the Israelite camp where they went out to battle where the Aron was there, but the Chazal understand that when you pray, you set up sort of a God's camp is within you. So the logic would be under those circumstances, it's like the big English is within you, that's somehow the logic.
Do
you realize that it's true? It means she can't daven, she can't bench licht. She can't say brachot. Do you know that there, just show you how far it goes, there are sources in which it mentions, okay, and the post can discuss the rationale. There is a custom that a woman after first Shabbos after childbirth does not write Shabbos licht.
That's what people add a candle for each child.
Because they didn't like Shabbos?
I heard that it was because she misses the first Shabbos after she...
Why did she miss? Now, well, no. They you remember that they gave birth at home. Good try. So some say, some of them say, she didn't presume that she's weak. She could bring the candles to her. Want to say, well, of course, because a yoledet is a nidah, and she crushed the bench left, right? Others say, no, it's because she's has nothing to do with it, so she's weak, and she can't get a bed. But for her Osmo White scandal, that would refer as her shaliah. Right? Anyway, I'm just trying to show you what the ramifications of these things are, and don't stop here. Don't pass judgment because I present to you the most extreme position.
That's right.
Yes,
I'm not speaking about the Yoled, because this is a public thing. You, not you, but you, what, has given birth, and you know it, I know it, and it's not. But when a woman is neither monthly, isn't that a very terribly private thing?
Yeah, I agree with you, and I must tell you that to the best of my knowledge, most of the posts that I saw that talk about women not saying brachot don't say that she doesn't mention it. It's very interesting that the list of the things the women didn't do did not include benching. It says they didn't make brachot, they didn't hold books, they didn't bench, they didn't do it. I didn't see anywhere in the list that she doesn't light Shabbos candles. That seems that they did under any circumstances. And as we go through, you'll see that was her mitzvah, and she's mitzvah. Look, I mean, let's go through. Yeah, I understand your point.
Why advertise, say, you attend synagogue every Shabbat? Why advertise to the world?
Okay, look. First of all, let us not, the concept of advertising, the concept of attending shul every Shabbat for women, okay, is a very... It's a very modern concept. Women, as far back as before the 1800s, really didn't go to shul at all. Very little, certainly not. Scarlet women, even these days. No, but Ashkenaz, they did. They went to Yemen, she went to shul for Shabbos sometimes. Even many, if you go, the average woman, they women didn't go to shul. Maybe in the big cities, they didn't generally. But so it's not, that was not a major problem. Yes, I'm sorry.
Where did the Nidah finish?
Because Rashi is going to raise the attack. He doesn't mention the tzav per se, he just mentions the custom. And Rashi wrote a book called Sefer HaPardes. It's actually probably written by the Talmidim of Rashi, and it says as follows. V'yesh nashim, shenimna'ot milekanes bebet ha'kneset benidutan umiliga b'sefer, or to touch a book. Now, there is some discussion of post-Kim, we'll get to it a little later. What does it mean b'sefer? Does it mean a book, or does it mean a sefer Torah? Or does it mean b'sefer or ba'sefer? It's a pe'ayidia, it means a sefer Torah. If it's b'sefer, it means a book. My general inclination, it means a book. A book. Although Rosh Hashanah, they didn't have printed books yet, but they did have Siddurim that were maybe.
Sefer Kodesh.
Yeah, it means a Sefer Kodesh. Yeah, that's correct. Chumra ba'alo. It's a simple stringency. What does Rosh Hashanah mean, Chumra ba'alo? It's not basement. What were Bachman on themselves? They thought they were to me, it's a hinder. There's no halachic logic behind it. The Einan Slichot Asoka. They don't have to do it. Dematan Einosa. What's the logic behind it? In the Pneshus, the Walk and Shabbat, the Knesset, the Mikdash, if they all did the shul, like a Beit HaMikdash in miniature, a few of our Tvila Laman the Knesset go. Why even after they go to the Mikvah? Right? After they go to the Mikvah, why do they go to shul? Vado Mechisuvei Kapara. Vado. נכנסו אל כפרה שכבר טבל והרים שימשו אם נכנס בו בקרנט. A person who is missing a מוכוסה כפרה, they're missing a korban, right? They're missing a korban and they waited a period of time, they've gone to the mikvah, all they're missing is a korban, right? And if they go into, so they had already been to the Mekka, and they go into the Beit HaMikdash when they're Tamei, right? In Beit HaMikdash Tamei, they're punished with karet. V'imkei lo tikansu bo la'olam, ad she'taviyu korban latid lavo. Then nobody should go in ever until the future times, because maybe women are zavot. I don't want to go into the whole, but maybe they're zavot and that requires a korban. Women keep 12 days, not keep 12 days, it gets into the law, because they're choshishot, maybe they're not stam yidot, but they believe let out of cycle, and that makes to make them zavot, and that therefore we make the zavot, we're the zavot, you're the korban. So what does it have to go to the mikvah? You're still a zavot. What does that help? And today we're the korban. Okay. The old sharei kulanu balei tumei nefesh, the shevetz. We're all to be met, right? We're all, if we touch maybe animals that are to be met, like a sheretz, like a juke. V'nechnasim sham, and we, although sheretz probably not a juke, sheretz probably like a lizard or something like that, or something like that. Halamanita, from this shall learn, she'eno k'migdash, yuchalot k'kenes, the fact that everybody goes and everybody has touched a dead body or touched something, the casket or something like that, or been in ohel where the casket has been, right? You don't even have to touch the body, you just go to the ohel. Right? And you go to the funeral home, the body's there, you're already done with that. So how can you go ever go to a shul? Now he finished with the word. Avam makom tara lahem. They do it out of a sense of striving for purification. And they're doing okay, Bashlin, may they be blessed, because why? Because they're doing it out of a spiritual motivation. He says, it makes absolutely no logic. But it says the motivation is the same thing. Once if the women want to do it, let them do it. Notice, if the women want to do it, let them do it. So where is the impetus coming from? It's not coming from the rabbis on top. It's the minach of the Beit Yisrael. The women are doing it. And you'll see this language over and over again. Okay. So one source make the shul, like a Beit HaMikdash. Another source given for this reason is because what's called chumrat bal keri, the stringency that applied to a man or a woman, you'll see, who ejaculated semen. Okay. Now we call, because keri is normally terminology used for nocturnal emission, but it doesn't only mean that. A man who sleeps with his wife, since he is ejaculated semen, he is a Valkyrie. But the woman is also a Balat Keren, because she also, in the process, comes in contact with the semen, and the semen leaves her body. The halacha is that she's also a Balat Keren. Now, there was a time, it was a takana of Ezra, that one who was a Baal Keri could not daven until he went to a mikvah. It was later, there was a later leniency that you needed Tisha Kavim. Tisha Kavim was a quantity of water, the equivalent would be that you had to take a shower. Washing yourself up would not be enough. Tisha Kavim had to be a whole bunch of water. It didn't have to be a mikvah per se, but it, Tisha Kavim. By the this and Ezra instituted that if one was a Baal Keri, he couldn't say certain tefillot, because of question of whether it's a tefillot Rabbanan, like Shimon Esrei or Kriyat Shema, the Mishnah and Brachot deals with. I don't want to go into all the details, but the Mishnah in Brachot, which is what's one second. We have the selection here. Okay. Baal Keri, says the Mishnah, it's referring to the recitation of Kriyat Shema. So the Mishnah says, Baal Keri Maharher Belibo, thinks Kriyat Shema in his heart, but he doesn't recite, he says Kriyat Shema in his heart, and there's a whole discussion what is the author of the Mishnah feels. Is Hebrew or Kedibur, is he actually saying Kriyat Shema, or is that considered? I think Kriyat Shema with intention is what I said. It's a big machlokes in the Gemara, I don't want to go into it. But he doesn't recite the Brachot Kriyat Shema before or after. All he says is, Mizmaharher, he thinks Kriyat Shema in his heart. Then the Mishnah goes on and says, Zav Shra Keri. If a person, for instance, was a Zav, okay? And this has to do with a man who has an omission, also it's a seminal omission, and then he has relations with his wife, so he's now a Baal Keri. He had this continuous flow, and on top of that he slept with his wife, so he's a Zav who then saw Keri, or who had a natural omission. Venida, a woman, who is a Nida, Shepata Shechvat Zera, for instance, and under permissible situation would be that a woman had relations with her husband and shortly afterwards she became a Nida. Okay, and a woman, according to Halakha, semen can leave the body for up to 72 hours afterwards. Okay, so the point of the matter is that she could be both a Nida and a Baal Keri at the same time. A Nida Shapota Shechvat Zera, because she slept with her husband just before that. Vahameshameshet Shiva'a Nida. Or she actually, well, she was sleeping with her husband, and while she was sleeping with him, she became a Nida. Right? So these are all cases where you can be two things. You can be a Nida and a Baal Keri. Srichin Tvila. They also require Tvila. Okay, they also require tefillah in order to say Kriyat Shema. What do you see from this? What do they need to know the mikvah for? This is a woman who slept with her husband. Let's take the last case. She slept with her husband, and while she's sleeping now, she turns, she becomes a Nida. How much longer is she a Nida? Another 12 or 7 days, whatever. Another 12, a whole bunch of days, right? What does the Mishnah tell her to do? Immediately go to the mikvah and say Kriyat Shema. Does the mikvah solve the Nida problem?
No.
So the Mishnah says explicitly what? That a Nida can say Kriyat Shema even if she doesn't, the Keri is the problem. The Nida's not a problem. The Mishnah says it. It can't be more explicit. I mean, I have to read it right. But it says it. You can't say it more explicitly, right? Okay, now, that's point one. And many of the poskim will attack the custom for the fact that it's against the Mishnah. Let's read the next, let's read the Gemara. The Gemara on this Mishnah goes as follows, a very important Gemara. Tanya, we learned. Rav Yehuda ben Beteva Hayona. Rav Yehuda ben Beteva would say, Ein divrei Torah mekablin tumah. The words of Torah cannot become defiled, cannot become tameh. Shenamar halo ko divrei devarai ke'esh nirum Hashem. My words are like fire, says God. Ma esh enon mekabel tumah, just as esh does never become tameh, then if a tameh person touches the fire, right? The fire per se doesn't become tameh, it says the fire underneath the pot. So if a tameh person puts his hand into the fire doesn't become tameh, make the pot tameh. There's no such concept. Ab divrei Torah enon mekabel tumah. So the words of Torah do not become tameh. Amar Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak. So Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak says, Nog alma ki Rav Yehuda ben Beteira b'divrei Torah. The world was noeg like Rav Yehuda ben Beteira when it came to divrei Torah. Now what he's essentially saying is, this is a much later development, that essentially the whole takana of Ezra was set aside. Ezra had instituted this concept of added kedusha, of that you could not learn Torah David. If you slept with your wife, male or female, how does it work? But he says, but the people do not accept it. The Gemara essentially says, this is a classic example of a gzeirah that was decreed that was never accepted. And the whole discussion about what type of gzeirah, and Chazak Kabbalah make a gzeirah, is it home or not? You think about it. The Sanhedrin comes along and says, now on, we want everybody to stand on their head. We agree to stand on their head. So most people said, oh, we're not going to do it. Exactly. What happens today? So, doesn't take votes. Because the people didn't accept it. If the people had said, yeah, we're going to all, and for 10, 15 years, everybody stands on their head and all of a sudden, you know, this is crazy. We're going to stop. No. That took hold. But essentially, what the Gemara maintains is that the Gzerah, there were people who did keep the Ezra, but the masses did not accept it. And the people, who did the masses hold like that? Hold like the view of Rav Yehuda ben Beteira. There's no such thing as the words of Torah becoming the fire. Okay? There's no such thing. Ki atar ha-ze'ira, the Ze'ira king says, amal v'klur t'filuta. They did away with it. The Tefillah of Ezra, they did away with it. Amarav Yanai, but Yanai says, well, not completely. Shamati shemikidim ba, v'shamati shemachmirim ba, and the those who were strict about it, and the those who were unique about it, the kol machmir ba, alatzma, whoever is stringent about this, Tefillah of Ezra, marichim lo yomav v'shnuta, they lengthen his life. That means, even though Tefillah of Ezra is never really took hold, this requirement that before you daven or learn Torah, if you have had a seminal omission, you can't learn Torah or say tefillah, never really halachically took hold, but if you're strict about it, then they, from heaven, they reward you. Yeah. First of all, I want you to be clear that this is the reason why many Hasidic Jews go to shul, go to the mikvah for Shabbos morning. They call it Tefillah Ezra. Why they call it Tefillah Ezra? Because the preferable time to sleep with your wife and is on Friday night, because not only fulfill the mitzvah Ona, which is an obligation to your wife, you also get Onik Shabbos.
So
what's
with
Erev
Shabbos?
Erev Friday night.
They go to the mitzvah
Erev
Shabbos.
What? No, they go to the mitzvah Erev Shabbos too, but that's in preparation for Shabbos. That's in preparation for Shabbos. But they will also go to the mitzvah, their people are very careful, they go to the mitzvah Friday morning, Shabbos morning. There's a whole discussion in post-game about, you know, we don't wash up the whole body, but that you can, and for those who are careful about the Tefillah Ezra, can actually do it. And it comes from the fact that there was such a concept of
Tisha Kavim
as a leniency instead of a mikvah, because they could, look, not every community had a mikvah. You're asking a question, I don't want to make a comment about something I don't know. My impression was that it came somewhat shortly after Ezra, when it became, they realized that it wasn't going to work with a mikveh, that not everybody could run to the mikveh, but washing up, they could borrow 10-9 carbon out of themselves and they could do it. Okay. But I don't know exactly whether it was decreed together or shortly after. I don't know. There was a slight change.
I want to understand the concept of the Zera. Obviously, the other example you brought was extremely arbitrary.
But this one,
I don't know what it stems from, but it seems rather arbitrary.
No, why Ezra instituted it was, Ezra was an institute. Was an educator. He came back to when the Jews came back. You have to understand. We don't. I mean, we do appreciate Ezra because we have an analogy with Russian Jewry today. Consider Russian Jewry coming back to in Ezra's time, the Bai Chain, where they don't even know it's forbidden to enter. They don't even know it's forbidden. They've forgotten everything, and then Ezra tells them that they're going to have to separate from their wives. Right, and then there's this big scene, crying scene, and some people break, and some people leave. And Ezra's on an education level. He's got to teach them Tumah and power. He's got to teach them into marriage. He institutes prayer. He's got to revise the whole perspective of, he introduces Kriyat HaTorah. They didn't have the seven. He didn't introduce, the question is, how many in Aliyot he introduced? And some say Moshe 1, and he said, what?
Ezra,
of course he would. Well, it was all question. No, the women didn't want to convert. I mean, all the Russian women want to convert.
He's introducing Isurim. That's different. Well,
he wants to educate them in the concept of Tumah Torah. The Gemara, look, I'm not completely, to be honest with you, I never really understood the Gemara myself. The Gemara says they didn't want their husbands hanging around their wives. So therefore, and he wanted them to be more devoted towards sanctification.
Well, he has the right to add things to the Torah.
Oh, but he only drew bones. There's drew bones all the time. You're asking a very good question. Why is there Baltosif? You're asking a question. Baltosif. The Gemara asks that question. The Gemara answers that Baltosif is only if your intention is to add a Doraita. But if you see, but the Torah clearly said that the Sum Yamim Sum Mikol Sheyocha. And Chazal understand that as the authority for the rabbis and stupid and accustomed. The Gemara asks, how do they add Megillah, and how do they add Shabbos candles, and half the stuff, half things we do as Jews, we do.
Those are part of the commandments.
But also negative commandments, all sorts of relatives that you can't marry.
This is completely
not a gather. Well, right, I mean, the Tumah, there was concept of Tumah, the Dutch that was carried in this Tumah. He extended it to other sanctifying things, right? He could view that as an extension of something from the Torah too. I mean, it depends how you want to understand it. But yes, Chazal do have power to institute commandments. You're right. Since you make a right, but Chazal do have that power. Okay. So now let's look, at the Rav Yah. Ravya and the Mordechai and the Beit Yosef, I've got several sources at the same time are saying very similar things. Source three. V'hanashim nahagu silsul uprishut va'atzman. The women, this word silsul is sort of like, pampering. It's almost like they treated themselves very specially. Uprishut and separation for themselves. Be'et midatam oder mito. She'ein rochot the Beit HaKnesset. Va'af kishonot mitpalalot en amdot b'fnei chavamayim. And when they daven, they don't stand in front of their women. Friends means, essentially what it means is if a woman is standing here facing them, she won't, if she's a leader, won't stand in front of them. In their presence. It's not completely clear. We'll keep reading sources what it means she didn't stand in front. I think that's what it meant. If you hang in there with me, you'll begin to understand what the problem is. Let me just mention, feminine hygiene was not what it is today. Feminine hygiene means the woman wore a shmack. Her clothes were dirty. There was odor. It's not the way it is today, where things are absorbing and internal and deodorant and all. And a woman coming to shul as a nita was a problem. It was a cleanliness problem. It was a pasnish problem. You know, your clothing might be stained. Women,
what? The baby is scattered. was also an aesthetic program. Right. An aesthetic.
Aesthetic, yes. Yes, so, and it went, now if, but I don't want to, listen, I'm already anticipating, what?
Well, no one's advanced, right? So everyone.
No, but that was, that they were used. And they, these claims, the minhag is a kosher minhag. Kidamrinan the balkeri, just as we say, by a balkeri. Shamati shamikilim ba, v'shamati shamachmirim ba, so they're holding it, and you don't have to be. V'chol hamachmir ba, marichim yamah v'shnatam. Anybody wants to, we lengthen his life. V'hu adin v'acherim, and the same thing with the other tameyot. What does he say? Again. Is he saying that we, the rabbinic institution, require him to do this? No! This is the minhag. They're the women of the women. They don't feel proper. They don't. They say pasnish. Now, what is the halakhic authority of pasnish? I don't know. But again, you get the feeling that Rashi, they all start up silsul. You know, this is extreme pampering. Uprishut that these women are accepted. But it's no different than the men who do tefillah. Do Tefillat Ezra. They don't have to do Tefillat Ezra, they're not Ezra. But there are men who are very careful about their own davening until they've gone to the mikvah.
The problem with Esther
is he says because the motivation is one to reach out for purity, and they want to be stripped of themselves. Now remember, that if you want to reach out for purity, how what stands in its way? What does that mean?
There's no way to do
tahara. Well, no. I mean that. A woman is a woman has the bench. Do you like the problem? Why? Can she not bench when she's eating? Because she wants this motivation of tahara. How much? I mean, she doesn't want to come to shul. Don't come to shul. You're not chayvin tefila b'tzibur. You don't want to do something. You're not chayvin. Don't. Your motivation is one of tahara. You don't think it's proper? Don't. Then not bench. How do you prevent not say Kiddush? How do you prevent yourself from doing it? That's the struggle. How, what are we doing? Until now, if you look at it, the post-game, I mean, sure, the very beginning is not to say any brachot or anything, but the other post-game we're talking about, not coming to shul, right? Not. Let's keep going. Source four, the second. Meham matnita. Now the Rif and the Rush are going to attack. Are going to attack this minhag based on the Mishnah we learned, the way we analyzed it. Meham matnita. That Mishnah that said what? That a nida that was about a carry that she can go to the mikveh and daven. So he says meham matnita and shamin and dezavin dezavov and nidot v'yodot kunan chayavin betfilah. They're all obligated in prayer. The daikin and tamar. Because look at the reason. The zav shera a carry. The nidash of the shifazer, he actually says a little differently, he says, maybe better, is what's the problem that she's got to go to the mikvah Notre Dame? Because she's a balat keri. But the fact that she's a nida is no problem at all. Right? She didn't have to go to the mikvah because she's a nida, let's say, on the first day. So it's because she's a balat keri or she omitted shifazer on the third line there. Who did tzvicha tefillah? That's why you need tefillah. Hazav shalom akeri, but a zav who did not see, have natural emission. The nida shalom potashir vazer, a nida did that, mit simen. En tzrichin tefillah, they don't need tefillah. The divrei hakol, the kein halacha. And I phrase what I mean, razon, the klal lo nipul in the takanat Ezra. Even if you're machmer, he says, because of Ezra, you want to tefillah Ezra. That's only if there was a mishum semen, but if there's no mishum semen, there's no problem. You know, you can. There's no prohibition of the, because you're neither to go to the mikvah before you can say. Okay, let's now go into the third reason. The third reason is what's called hakriveinu na lefechatecha. Hakriveinu na lefechatecha means Shishayah Navi, when he talks to the Jews and talks about their hypocrisy. You know, like they do it formally, but there's no. It's a beautiful, beautiful show. It's a beautiful job. It really makes fun of the Jews. They bring all this fun. But no, he's a mum. And he says, would you bring it to your governor? Would you do something, you know, you pick a carbon, but you know, did you really, it has this big mum in it. You know, and it's obvious, everybody sees it. Would you bring such a thing to the governor? So you bring it to God and without shame? Okay, so it's essentially, it's posthumous. You wouldn't do such a thing in the secular world. Why do it when it comes to religious observance? Now, this type of concept, okay, is, I hope you understand, is very societal. And I hope you also appreciate that in the Middle Ages, Nidot were Oscars. The secular world had a rough time with women and women's sports. Okay? We're going to see, let's look at the Chatam Sofer Bahagod, the Chatam Sofer in his comments of the Aruch Chaim, cites the Ramban in Parsha Vayetze, al pasuk kidach nashim li. Remember, he comes in, the Lot comes in, checking everything else, and Rivka says, Rachel says, he said, forgive me for not giving up, but I'm having my period now, right?
And also smells.
Masha'l Rav Acharonim Matirim, the reason that the majority, we haven't really come to the halacha, we'll come to the halacha at the end. So the reason that the majority of later poskim, Matirim Lisha Be'er Eit Riyata, when a woman is having a flow, Likanes Be'et HaKnes Le'et Kaleel, why they were generally lenient, and the Mishim Desvir Alehu, is because they maintain the Hadam Nivla B'moch, because the woman now wears sanitary napkins or tampons, and the blood is absorbed within the tampon. The Einon Ofel Alufa doesn't really lie on her flesh proper. The Gam Mechuseh Be'Beged Shelah, and is also covered by her panties or by her garments. V'Amagin Avram B'Siman Ayinah V'Sim Dalet V'Sim Kavna Pasak. The tzoash nivla b'beged, that if there's defecation, if one's underwear is soiled, for instance, and it's covered with a garment, v'hi mechusen, it's covered mutal l'tala, one can daven even though his coat is soiled. Aval lefamim, kishamoch malei dam, if a woman hasn't changed her tampon or the sanitary napkin, and it is she's beginning to leak, okay, that's full of blood. V'yishayin ha-machlefet ha-moch, Hadam enu nivla v'lo avikinoch, not considered the blood that's absorbed. V'ulai lezecha shishu anashim ve'eit liyatan shidufan nakim. Maybe that's why women were afraid, because her body weren't. Some of you are saying that modern hygiene has changed our halachic situation. That if you, I'm trying to remember where I saw, there was a movie, I think it was Ben where there's a scene where she has it, that was a very vivid scene in the movie. Something like that. But I think it should be very clear that even up to the very modern, until the 1900s, women who had their period, you know, did not have absorbent. It was a fundamental, it was a major problem. Major problem of maintaining cleanliness, and it was a serious problem. Okay. In any case, so he maintains that the major reason why the woman, now he says, look, he says, if that's the reason, because of cleanliness, that's why, because she felt dirty when she was having her period, then we understand why during the 5 days, yes, and then the other days, no. That's nothing to do with too much, not as, and that why she didn't want to stand in front of her other women, because her clothing may have been soiled, or there may have been an odor, or the like, and she didn't want to stand in front of other women. It's not the other women when they were dominating. There was an opening. The most extreme position is the position of a vertigo, which is the extreme. That's really what there's a book called Masavav, which is a book of the Vilna-Gaon's customs. Okay, Masavav, the actions of the rabbi. This is about the actions of Vilna-Gaon. And in this book, they quote the Vilna-Gaon as maintaining his brother. Nida v'yodot. Mutarim litpalel miyad, she can, even though she's in the middle of her flow, she can daven immediately. Afilu kishadam alayhem, even if the blood is flowing on them. Umutarim gankin litpalel bebet haknesset, they can take it, and they can immediately, so even if they just got the flow, or they just gave birth, they can walk right into shul, he says, no problem. The Rayan of Davar, the proof is Minidash Apolta Shirvat Zera. Her Lavachi, Mutarin of Davar. It was the only problem is she has to admit because she had a seminal flow, but not because that she was meaningful. Essentially, the way the folks can understand the Vilna tradition is that menstrual blood, if I had a cut and I was bleeding, so the Vilna Gaon has such a view, menstrual blood is regular blood. It's no difference whatsoever. Okay. That is essentially some of the fundamental positions, the various reasons that sort of review the various reasons given why women, they have instituted this custom, and then they can make it clear. And everything that we've read now, the custom was the custom of the women. Now, it doesn't make it less binding as a custom if all the women did it. Understand. Customs are customs. And especially if the motivation was an act of sanctification of the women. Now, it's not that customs don't change. Customs can change. and I'm out of the period, I don't know if I've ever seen, does anybody know, Tisha, does anybody know a woman who wouldn't kiss the mezuzah because she was so much of a...
I have a question.
You
were saying that, you said what Professor Prince did?
Yes.
That you're saying that the menstrual blood is the same as if you cut your eye, the same blood. Because I can still remember, this was maybe 40 years ago, somebody had said that, you know, that they found that, I forget what kind of a small animal or whatever died, you know, from menstrual blood. Well, these are bubble mice.
It comes with the erosion of the urine lining. It's blood. Now, there may be other components as well, because there may be components from the actual urine lining itself that causes an odor, or the coastal causes a certain amount of different types of forms of coagulation. Like, I'm a chemist, not a biochemist. I'm not a biologist either. But very clearly, the fundamental element is blood, which comes from the urine. Look, the fact of the matter is that since it's created with that which makes a woman most feminine, it has to do with her sexual identity. Clearly, it comes with a certain amount of baggage. Right? I don't deny that. But the question is, what has Allah to do with the Burma Gong? Any of them is a fringe. Let me just make it clear. The Burma Gong had no problem with this custom. The Vilna Gaon says it's a minik she'ema yisod, it's a minik that's not custom. The women want to be from, not they want to be from, let them be from for themselves. And other women don't want to be from, they don't have to be from. You know, but you have to understand that Jews also were very careful about customs. So if a question comes to a posse, he's got to ask several questions. First of all, is this a custom? A custom that has no source, a custom that is just, you know, silsul, rishul, ba'alma, umra, ba'alma. What are the parameters of it? But it's a custom, it's quoted all the time. Has the custom changed in the modern period? I maintain the custom has. I have no doubts that there are very few women who, even if they're menstruants nowadays, at the sacred Torah, maybe in Haredi communities they do. But in the vast majority of women, if they're menstruants, and if there's a mezuzah, or the sacred Torah goes by, one case. Now you're asking a very interesting question. The question of Eidot Mizrach versus Ashkenaz, probably not today, is a situation where the customs switched. The Ashkenazim were machmer, the Sfarim were mekel, and somehow as they moved to the 1900s, towards the 1800s, switched. Ashkenazim get more and more and more lenient, and the Sephardi get more and more machmir. You'll see Abadia say hollering and screaming at the Sephardi women. What is this being machmir? Shulchan Aruch passes mutter. Why don't we just start the halacha? We have like another 10 minutes. That's concerned with the halacha. Set page 3. Okay. Let's now read Rabbi Yosef and now get into halacha. What do the poskim say after addressing all this? Okay. I just want to mention there were, as I was going through. Sorry, I'm rudely interrupting myself. There are four fundamental reasons given why the women had this custom. The first reason, because they're shul, and that's all, that they're the only shul related, is because shul is like a Beit HaMikdash now. The second reason was because it's similar to the stringency that some men accept upon themselves by seminal flow. Okay, so it would be an analogy, seminal flow to uterus. Third would be, in the secular world, women, menstruants are ostracized, or don't have a social standing. And therefore, in the religious world, we should do the same. That's called prevailing love. And the fourth reason, which I think to the modern ear rings most true, has to do with cleanliness. So the women felt dirty when they got
menstruated.
That
custom
stuff
that says that about that women should be nothing.
Yes, it's true.
He's like 1930.
No, not so much. He's 1840. I think he passed away around 1840. Okay. Let's now move on to the halakha. Okay? One of the first sources is the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch in Orach Chaim Simen Pechat. Does anybody know what the Simen Pechat is? It's in Hilchot. It's the last halakha in Hilchot Kriyat Shema. Okay? In the discussion of Hilchot Kriyat Shema, the Shulchan Aruch, Rabbi Yosef Karo says, Kol Hatmein Korin Batorah can read from a Sefer Torah, the Kohen Kriyat Shema Umitpalim, no old Bible. All the Tmeim. Okay. And if you have any doubts about what he means when he says Kol HaTmeim, let's see what he writes in Yeridea. In Yeridea, by Hilchot Sefer Torah, he writes in number Bet, Kol HaTmeim Afilu Nidot. So he says it explicitly. Mutarim Echoz B'Sefer Torah V'Likropo, can hold the Sefer Torah and read from it. V'hu Shelo Yehe Yideen Shehet Shebi Metunachot. Apologize. Shelo Yideen, that their hands shouldn't be dirty. Olulukachot. So the fact that their menstruation is not a problem. The question is, are your hands? Okay. So, that's pretty much carte blanche. However, let's look at Halacha Gimel. Now with the Rabbeinu Yeruchan. Okay, Rabbeinu Yeruchan is the end of the, I think it's around the 1400s, if I'm not mistaken. Ra'iti anashim to'im lomar, shehayoledet tzricha lizaher mi dikanes bevet hakneset ad sheyavu mem lezachar. Pain in the caver. I saw some who have the custom, and there are to this day women who have this custom, who do not enter shul until the Yemei Tohar, not for the Yemei Tohar finished. 40 days for a zachar and 80 days for a nekeva. That was the rule in the Beit HaMikdash. You should know that. Okay? Now, as far as her husband was concerned, there's a disconnection here between her husband and the Beit HaMikdash. For her husband, she was permitted immediately after 7 days for 33 days, whether she was nida or not, whether she was living or not. And for a woman, for a daughter, 14 days plus another 66 days. As far as the Beit HaMikdash concerned, she couldn't go in until, and bring a korban, she had to bring a korban, she couldn't go into the Beit HaMikdash until 40 days for male and 80 days for female. And then there's those women who don't enter shul, says the Rabbi Yeruha. Ta'utu, it's wrong. Uminutu, it's apostasy. That looks quite hard. Wow. You know that they came as from a Christian source. And the Christians had this negative attitude toward sex. I mean, that's what he says. That tzarich limchot biyadam, you have to object to this custom. She's permitted to come in immediately.
But
obviously, but he wouldn't. But if you see that he doesn't know that, it's wrong.
But it's wrong. Yes, it's called
me news. Then it was really bothering. He felt that it was anti-Allah. Beit Yosef Karo writes by Rabbi Yosef Karo in his book, The Tour, writes Vahashta Nashay Didan. Lo nahuk limana klal lebeit hakneset. These are women, and he's writing in Tzvat again, and this is consistent with what he wrote before in the Shulchan Aruch. Our women, he says, go to shul. Now, let's read the Rambam. But Moshe Isserlish is now living in the 1500s in Poland. He represents, excuse me? They did. They went from the obsession of big cities and then Yamin to Rain. There was an Ezra Mashim. You're right. No, many of the too many shuls, there was an Ezra Mashim. I agree that the woman going on mass to shul every Shabbos is very much of a modern, I would say, even American custom. I remember the reason why this shul started in the first place. When Bill Rosenblum and several others, the gentlemen came to this community, families came to do American dance, came to really, there was only one shul, and there was the Rabbi Pinch shul in this neighborhood, and there really wasn't any place for the women, and some people didn't have it outside. And the men and the American families wouldn't put up with it, so Rabbi Furman started in the South. That's how the shul started, because the American women wanted to go to shul. But the Israeli women didn't go to shul. And everybody first came there. A lot of Israeli women stayed home, and it wasn't such a. It's become a very much of a modern phenomenon.
Because they
work
6 days a week at that time.
All right, let's read the Moshe Isserlish. Now, until now we read the Sephardi opinion, and it's very clear, no problems whatsoever. You can go to Sefer Torah, you can daven, you go to shul. No. The Moshe is, so that's why when you tell me the Sephardi custom has now switched, it's very surprising. Because, you know, this is, the Shulchan Aruch, or the Yosef Karo, is the major posek for the Sephardi world. The Rambosh Moshe Isalis, living in Poland, representing the Ashkenazi view, writes, brings the custom. Yesh shekatvu, those are written, she'en le'isha nida b'nei li'iyata li'kanes le'vet ha'kneset o le'itpalel o le'azkir et Hashem o li'gah, again, this sefer or bas sefer, it's not clear who it is. V'yesh omrim shemuteret v'kol v'chein ikar. Okay, so what does Moshe Nisim say? He quotes the custom, those who say the women should not enter. Why shouldn't they enter? Because that's the custom. Not because they hold that it's usher. They hold because that was the custom. Yesha katvu shein lishan yida v'meiri yitan v'kanes v'bet ha'kneset o l'itpalel o l'azkir Hashem o l'igat. Nothing of sanctity. V'yesh omrim shemuteret v'kanes. Although say, no, there's no problem whatsoever. V'chein ikar. And that's the right use of the Moshe. But there's no halachic problem. Aval, haminhag b'medinot elu svara mishuna. But what can I do? Even though it's very clear that from a halakhic perspective, there is absolutely no problem. The women here in Poland are stricter. They don't go to shul. The minhag is svara mishuna. But watch, ubi mainly bunana guet. But in the clean days, they're not. And even in those places where they are knowing to be stringent, the yamim noraim, in yamim noraim, ukahai gavna, and in similar situations, what do you mean similar situations? For some, bar mitzvah, family simcha, sheva brachas, right? All those situations where she would really be left out if she didn't go to shul. And with the example I'm giving you, the examples mentioned in the post, people chai gavna. Sherabim mitasmim lelech lebet ha'kneset kishal nashim le'okam ki hu lehen itzavon, because they feel sad about it. Itzavon gadol, shakol mitasmim, ve'hen yamdu b'chutz, and they stand outside. So, even in those places where they were strict, okay, let's read the Gra, this is the Gra's comments in the Shulchan Aruch. The Gra wants to make set the record straight. And even according to the first view, which is stringent, lo katav ela lechumra be'alma. It's only a unbased, simple stringency. It's not halacha to you. Now, why does the Gra do it? He wants to say, look, you got to know what you're pleading. What against? Not a something to write that. It's something to drop on. You're talking about a simple act of stringency. You have to wait. I have to weigh things against other things. Now, I will stop here. It's already quite a bit. I want to give you the. I think we're going to continue applying to some other cases and a little bit more examples. We'll finish in sort of about half an hour next year. I want to make it very clear that there are very few halakhic problems. There's no halakhic problem. I mean, except for the custom, and the Gra keeps saying, it's a chumra ba'alma. It's a simple stringency. But as you move towards into the 1800s, especially in the Haredi world, where the world was turned on its head, where the reformer coming in, conservative are coming in, and they're challenging, the Haredi world starts latching on to every single minhag as it's a life or death situation, because Judaism is a rise and fall. If you want to know part of what I believe is the resistance to women holding the Sefer Torah, I'm not talking about what they're going to do with the Sefer Torah, or just holding the Sefer Torah. It has to, especially in the Haredi world, especially surprisingly amongst women themselves, the objection of women to other women holding the Sefer Torah. They'll use every argument in the book, which really doesn't. They'll say every argument in the book. Halakha doesn't support it. Certainly not a halakha. As far as a minhag, Oh, some view it as a mimic of utilitarian. You want to do it, do it. You don't want to do it, don't do it. Also, I think you have to realize that any one time only, what's in a calculation about it? What percentage of any group of women at one time are menstrual? If you take out all the women who are menopausal, that's the cause. And all the women who are pregnant, all the women, right? Oh, we're just not, right? And assuming the woman is, any woman is...
Well, that argument was stronger in the old days. The women spend more of their childbearing years.
I agree, but still, a woman menstruates once, excuse me, let's assume a woman menstruates let's be liberal. Women nowadays only have longer cycles. Well, let's say once out of every 4 weeks, okay? So it means that any one time, only 25% of your women are menstruates. That's not taking anything else, but all the other women are what? And periods now statistically are longer, tend to be longer. That the women are irregular life. So, I did a calculation that any one time it comes out approximately 20%, not 25, but 20% of the women, maybe 70% of the women, are menstruating at any one time. So why do you prevent all women from having to? Because maybe 20% of the women, one out of every five women, is a menstruate, and a custom that is a chum of the alma, and if it causes you tsar, you don't have to. I hope you get a feeling why there's really no problem. And I will now, hopefully next week I'll start being a name dropper. Major posting. Let's talk about there are other customs which are at the end of the stage. The problem is certainly not serious, as some people say. Okay, but again, don't take my word for it. See the sources.